Today we do our annual Super Bowl pregame show. We're going to talk about conspiracies and the history of the Kansas City Chiefs, H.L. Hunt, politics, Philadelphia Eagles symbolism of the Phoenix of Freemasonry, NFL rigging game conspiracies, and the symbolism to expect from the halftime show with Kendrick Lamar. We'll talk Jay-Z's Roc Nation, Absol, and Aleister Crowley. We're going to talk about Kendrick Lamar's alien abduction, look at his alien lyrics, and then I'm going to make some scoring predictions based on the number 666. It's all here today. I've been doing this since 2014. My name is Isaac Weisop. You're listening to Occult Symbolism and Pop Culture. That's right. Watch out, everybody. You got Ultra T... Fuck. Ultra High T Isaac right here. All right. I've been Ultra Low T Isaac the last couple weeks. I was getting over an illness, a tragedy in the family. My dog passed. And it's been a rough go. But I'm here to tell you, I ain't taking no shorts, no losses. We're getting right into it. We're doing the annual pregame show. That's right. Before the Super Bowl, I often do a show discussing some of the things we might see, maybe some predictions. And today I've got a doozy for you. This one's going to be one of the best ones I've ever done. Because this time I'm a sports ball fan. In the past, I wasn't. Today I am. That's right. I watched the whole season this year. This is my second year of doing this because I stopped watching sports ball back in, I don't know, 96, 95. I became a man pursuing manly things, okay? And it's been a long time. And it may surprise you, I was heavy duty into sports ball. Every sport, I knew everything there was about every player, every statistic. I was in deep as a young child and teenager. Then around the time I got my driver's license, I didn't care about none of that stuff. And I didn't for so many years. And then 2 years ago, I decided to start watching football, and this is now my second full season of watching it. So, new perspectives I've got. So I'm going to do a little bit of a deeper dive into these teams and such, and we're going to hit the halftime show and so on. And just so you know, I'm rooting for the Eagles all day, every day. Officially I'm Raider Nation, but my sort of close second team is my home team, the Philadelphia Eagles, because that's where I grew up out there. The Raiders didn't do so hot this year, okay? It's not our year. So I get to root for the Eagles. That's the home team. That's who I'm pulling for. And who doesn't hate the Chiefs anyway, okay? Everyone hates the Chiefs. And we're actually getting the rematch from 2 years ago of the Eagles and the Chiefs in the Super Bowl. Last time the Chiefs won by three because they always win within one score. So let's talk about who the Chiefs are. Everyone hates them for good reason. To be fair, though, it's a franchise that deserves a lot of respect. They've been around forever. But the history of them, it goes wild, all right? Let's talk about it. There's a family called the Hunts, the Hunt family from Texas, and they stacked up cheddar from the oil business, as one would expect. Family's worth almost $25 billion, probably more than that now. That's right, B. $25 billion. And it all goes back to Haroldson Lafayette Hunt Jr., H.L. Hunt. And he acquired the rights to an oil field in East Texas. And it turned out to be one of the country's largest oil deposits. All right. This is back in the early 1900s. And from this massive amount of wealth, he starts a bunch of other businesses. But ultimately, oil is the foundation of where it's at. But he did a bunch of other stuff. Okay. And H.L. Hunt Haroldson, what should I call him? Harold? H.L. sounds weird. Haroldson sounds weird.
Harold.
Harold, he died in 1974, but he was so paid. He had so much money that when he died, his money, the money and the wealth and the investments and the businesses that he had set up over his lifetime was pulling down $1 million a week. Could you even imagine? He died with a net worth of about $3 billion in the 70s, right? He died one of the eight richest people in the world, one of the richest Americans in American history, right next to John D. Rockefeller, which we always talk about, the Illuminati bloodlines. And You know, we talk about the Rockefellers and the Rothschilds and the Soroses and who else? You know, the Astors and the Bundys. What about old Haroldson? What about them? You tell me they're not Illuminati confirmed? They're Illuminati confirmed? All that money? If you go to the Encyclopedia Britannica, it says that one of his passions was being conservative. So, you know he's super chill, right? Yeah, he's super chill and laid back. No, he's not. Of course not. He said, it says from the Encyclopedia Britannica, Hunt became best known for his political views. From 1951 to 1956, he funded his own foundation called the Facts Forum, which produced radio and television programs of conservative, anti-communist political commentary. The foundation also distributed books by Senator Joseph McCarthy and others. In 1958, he revived the foundation as Lifeline to distribute a daily 15-minute radio program carried by more than 400 stations. 15-minute program? What are you doing? Let's see. Sorry, I gotta get a Fisherman's Friends loaded up because my throat's already hurting. I've been sick this is like 5 weeks. This is insane. I've never been so sick in my life. Just add it to the list of the misery that is 2025. So, Haroldson had 15 kids, 3 wives, a family values kind of guy, and they found out after he died, he was still married to 2 of them at the same time. What do you call it? Bigamy, I think they call that. One of those 15 kids got lobotomized. Another one named Lamar would go on to invent the Super Bowl. We're going to come back to that. Most of the kids just basically rode the coattails of daddy's businesses, which makes sense, right? I ain't hating on that. That's fine. I would do it too. Nelson developed some Libyan oil fields. Nelson and Lamar would go on to try to buy all the world's silver and corner the market, but then they got caught. I don't know the legalities of it, but apparently they were into some nefarious business and got caught. One of the daughters named Helen died in 1962 in the Air France Flight 007 disaster, apparently one of the most famous airplane accidents. 007, of course, the number of John D., right? That's what he used to sign his intelligence documents as for the Queen Elizabeth, which ties us into Tubal Cain, okay? Tubal Cain, which ties into like Prometheus sort of angles of man getting the divine fire from the gods with which they will ultimately destroy themselves. Then another kid, they name it, that one's dead, so let's have another one name her Helen too, I guess. And she starts something called the Pastoral Couples Therapy. I don't know what it, I couldn't understand what it was saying. And she had a daughter named Hala, and Hala would go on to be in an experimental black metal band called Liturgy. And Hala is transgender. So, Haroldson's fuming from from the grave. He's like, dude, I didn't make all this money for these they-thems or whatever. Because he's very conservative, right? I'm an ally. I'm just saying this is what he says. Sometimes my granola team gets a little tender, a little sensitive. So I got to make sure you understand. Now, I hope you're sitting down for this next revelation, because Haroldson turned out he was also very racist. I know it's hard to believe. A billionaire from the 50s. Turns out he was racist. Malcolm X wanted the smoke. That's when you know you're up there, right? This is what Wikipedia says. It says, multiple sources, including American civil rights icon Malcolm X, implicate Hunt as a lifelong racist who provided major financial assistance to several far-right organizations, such as the Minutemen and the John Birch Society. The John Birch Society deserves a deep dive on its own. That's kind of one of the biggest Illuminati-type groups there is. Anyway, we'll keep going. Hunt considered African Americans a political threat and made this clear in his radio interviews and broadcasts. One of Hunt's chief allies, Alan Zoll, said that since 1936, Hunt advocated deporting all African Americans to Africa. For this reason, Hunt supplied the Nation of Islam leader Elijah Muhammad continuous financial support due to the latter's belief in racial separation from whites. And this is given vibes of the dude who, that R.C. Christian dude who put up the Georgia Guidestones monument. Like, he was on a similar sort of racist, eugenics kind of vibe, okay? Interestingly enough, in Wikipedia, it tells us that Hunt also implicated in the JFK assassination. Him and old Mr. Big Hog himself, LBJ. I'm going to read you from Wiki. Madeline Duncan Brown, an advertising executive who claimed to have had both an extended love affair and a son with President Lyndon B. Johnson, said that she was present at a party at the Dallas home of Clint Murchison Sr., another oil tycoon, on the evening prior to the assassination of JFK, which was attended by LBJ, as well as other famous, wealthy, and powerful individuals, including Haroldson Hunt, Murchison, J. Edgar Hoover, and Richard Nixon. According to Brown, that advertising executive, who claimed she had a love affair and a son with LBJ, she said that LBJ had a meeting with several of the men, after which he told her, quote, "After tomorrow, those G.D. Kennedys will never embarrass me again. That's no threat. That's a promise." Brown's story received national attention and became part of at least a dozen JFK assassination conspiracy theories. Kennedy assassination investigator Dave Perry refuted this theory with evidence showing neither President Johnson nor Hoover were in Dallas at the time of the alleged party, and Murchison had not lived in Dallas in his Dallas home for a number of years. And witnesses placed Murchison at his East Texas ranch. So, interesting. We'll see if the supposed release of all the JFK documents that we're gonna supposed to get. We'll see if there's any mention of that name, Madeline Duncan Brown. I'm going to look for it. You try to remember and look for it. One of us will find it. So, Haroldson, all those things, okay? And to be fair, like, I'm not a total psychopath. I realize that the older generations like that, like, they're a little more racist. It was a little more acceptable. I don't think it's okay. I'm just saying when, you know, Mom calls the Asians Orientals, like, she's not, you know, like, it's an older generation. Like, they're doing their best sometimes, right? Like, I try to throw them a bone sometimes. But Haroldson seemed like he was on some extra racist stuff, so F him, right? That's all I'm saying. Let's talk about one of his kids. So basically, this racist dude came up on all this money, and that's what gave us the NFL, is what I'm trying to say. Let's talk about one of his kids, Lamar Hunt. He's dead. Died in 2006. Well, Lamar Hunt is the reason we have NFL the way it is today. He founded the American Football League back in 1959. He also started Major League Soccer. Nobody cares. All right. But he started the American Football League in 1959 because the NFL refused to give him an expansion franchise team. Okay. And back then, football wasn't as popular as baseball. Believe it or not, baseball was the number one sport. Football was second. And Lamar Hunt is like, fine, I'm going to start the American Football League, and I'm going to create a team called the Dallas Texans. Now, the NFL, they were hating. Of course they were hating. They were like, all right, we're going to actually get an expansion team in Dallas, too. And we're going to call them the Dallas Cowboys. So Lamar Hunt, he's like, oh, my God, these NFL guys. Fine, I'm going to move the Dallas Texans over to the Kansas City Chiefs is where we're going to relocate to and rename. All right. So these two are beefing, the NFL and the AFL. And finally, in 1967, just 8 years after Lamar Hunt was like, F it, I'm going to start my own football, we get the first ever Super Bowl, the Kansas City Chiefs of the AFL versus the Green Bay Packers of the NFL. Green Bay won. Now, why with the NFL, who was hating on the AFL, give them a chance to be at this coveted sort of Super Bowl game. I liken it to Lamar Hunt being similar to Eric Bischoff from the WCW days of the 90s, because WCW was second to WWF back then, and they started poaching some of the guys from WWF, and it became this Monday night battle. And they were both, WCW and WWF were duking it out for years. And WWF ultimately won. Vince McMahon buys out WCW, and, you know, they kind of dominate the wrestling stuff. And similar thing happened with the NFL and the AFL. The AFL was kind of pulling down some of the NFL players, and it started messing up some of the drafts from the colleges, and the NFL just decided, oh, okay, it's better just to, you know, you can't beat them, join them kind of thing. So these two merge, and when they merge, Lamar Hunt wrote a letter to the NFL commissioner proposing that they have a championship game called the Super Bowl, but it was a joke. What the joke is, I don't know. What Super Bowl means, no idea. Nobody knows to this day. It's a urban, it's a mystery. And I'm just kidding. Someone could probably explain it. But the AFL-NFL championship game started out, and the media, they somehow got a hold of this letter, and for the third championship game, they finally started calling it the Super Bowl. So basically, Lamar Hunt came up with the name. Okay. Now Lamar, he pulled down a couple wives, a couple kids. One of those kids was Clark Hunt, and Clark Hunt would go on to take over as chairman of the Kansas City Chiefs, and he runs it with his brother, Lamar Hunt Jr. And, of course, you know, all those things took place after Lamar Hunt died. So now you've got Lamar Hunt Jr. and Clark Hunt running the Chiefs, owning the Chiefs, which was started by Grandpa, old racist Grandpa, Haroldson. Okay. So these billionaire kids own and operate the Chiefs. And, of course, most of them take after Grandpa and they lean right. They're conservative. Clark Hunt, he's the CEO of the Chiefs. Apparently, his wife is very outspoken about Trump and Christianity and all that. You know, very on brand for what you'd expect. Not that there's a problem with that. You know, there's free speech in this country still, as of this recording. And then you've got all the players. We're going to talk politics a little bit here. You got Patrick Holmes, the old zesty Patrick. He stays neutral. He's Switzerland. Very smart man. Probably because I know which way he goes. Because his wife is very outspoken. Brittany Mahomes, she's very MAGA. Which tells me, like, the Chiefs are very happy about that, right? If the owners are very conservative, they're probably happy. I'm going to come back to that, though. I'm going to explain to that why I actually like these guys. Travis Kelce stays neutral as well. Smart guy. And I'm going to guess he leans the other way because his old lady, Taylor Swift, she's a liberal, right? So I'm going to guess he leans the other way. But these two guys are smart enough to know to be like, no, I'm not getting involved here. Then you've got Harrison Butker, the kicker, who's also very zesty. Lots of zesty guys on the Chiefs. What's going on there in the locker room? He's very outspoken about being conservative. Started his own pack. I mean, he doesn't get more political than that, starting your own pack. The Upright Pack. Which is a nice play on the term right wing and the term for the uprights as the goals for the field goal that he kicks. He went viral for a commencement speech he did at Benedictine College, talking about how the women that were graduating were probably more excited to go have kids and be a good housewife. And he says he hates Pride Month. I mean, he again, very outspoken, not very moderate, it seems. So, again, like everything in this miserable landscape of today, there's this political examination of the two Super Bowl teams. Now, here's what's interesting. Clark Hunt was at a White House Super Bowl win event, and he gave a little speech about how great sports are for bringing people together in a community. and, you know, celebrating diversity, which is a naughty word now, apparently. And he also said that he's cool with his players on both sides speaking out their opinion. He's like, yeah, go for it. So I'm like, I don't know. I think this dude's all right. I think he's all right. Or he's just saying that, and in private, he's like, man, get these liberals out of here or whatever. I don't know. Who knows? I could be wrong. But he seems like a moderate guy, and I love that. I love me some moderates. So, you know, as of this recording, I don't hate this billionaire yet. So what? His grandpa's racist. Most of them rich old white dudes in the 50s were racist. I'm not hating on the guy because he's rich. He was born rich. Like, maybe he's an all right guy. So to continue on the political tip, Trump congratulated the Chiefs on their AFC championship win this year, but silent on the Eagles winning the NFC championship. Right? And you probably know why. Because there is this sort of general vibe that the Chiefs are conservative based upon all these things I said. And, of course, their location is more sort of central, southern, rural, conservative. Whereas you got the Philadelphia Eagles. The Eagles, that's a pretty liberal area, right? They voted for Kamala. They're not fans of Donald Trump. So you could see that this is ripe for political drama. Newsweek stated the Truth Social. It says, in his post, Trump congratulated the Chiefs, calling them a great team, coach, quarterback, and virtually everything else. Didn't mention Kelsey, by the way. No tight ends, but the coach and the quarterback. Before adding a nod to their loyal fan base, claiming that many voted for me, MAGA, in record numbers. So you know who Trump's pulling for, clearly, right? Now, let's switch gears to rigging, the cheating theory about the NFL. And this all stems from the NFL allowing gambling back in the April of 2021. They were expecting to generate $270 million in revenue the first year. And I was looking around, and on AmericanGaming.org, it claims they're actually generating up to $2 billion a year. So a lot of money getting thrown around here. And from this, it's argued that now you've got too many financial interests involved in covering the spreads for the betting, the gambling. For example, in the AFC Championship game that I watched with my own eyeballs, Xavier Worthy from the Chiefs and the Bills safety Cole Bishop both went up to catch a pass. The replay clearly shows Bishop from the Bills having control of the ball. And even after the play review, the referee still gave it to the Chiefs. And when you know it, the Chiefs won. It was part of the reason why they won. There's lots of rumors about, I think Tom Brady mentioned this, about how the Chiefs get every call in the world, that kind of thing. And you see it when you watch them. You're like, bro. I mean, they're a good team. I'm not taking that away from them. But, boy, they sure do get a lot of calls. So the Chiefs and the refs, they won most of the games, a record number of games, by a one-score victory. All their games are pretty close. So if all that is tied into a conspiracy, the argument would be that the Hunt family, again, one of the richest in the world, have the deepest pockets, and they could be paying off the refs to look for penalties and whatnot to benefit the Chiefs. And, of course, all the other owners and teams and such are involved, but who knows, right? But the Chiefs are particularly hated for this good fortune they have with the refs. And as of right now, they are favorites to win by, I think, 3 points is what I said. But I'm obviously pulling for the Eagles. The Eagles, because that's my home team. They got Saquon Barkley. They didn't have him in 2023 when they lost. He's going to put them over the top. They're going to win. He lived in my hometown of Allentown, went to my alma mater of Penn State. He's going to win it for him. I feel it in my bones. Which, of course, would defy this conspiracy, unless, like, the Chiefs are like, okay, We're gonna lose by, you know, 4 points, and we're gonna put all this money down. Whatever. I don't know. You could argue that all day about the cheating, the rigging, but it's a conspiracy worth looking at. So we'll see what happens. Now, big shift into the halftime show. That was the sports ball portion of the episode today. Every year since 2012, I've done an analysis on the halftime Super Bowl show, because that's like the high profile mass ritual event. I'll put links in the show notes if you're like, a high profile what? I'll put a link in the show notes. You can check out some other shows and get smart on it before Sunday. Back in 2012, Madonna and CeeLo Green and Nicki Minaj and MIA did this Black Magic Isis performance, which was pretty wild. And those are back in the blogging days. You know? The golden age of blogging, which, by the way, that Substack is pulling me in deeper and deeper. I enjoy it. I feel like it's back in my golden days of blogging. If you haven't subscribed, go do it. IlluminatiWatcher.substack.com. Because as you know, I got hit with some legalities for my blog, so I'm throwing it down on the Substack. Let's go, baby. Links are always in the show notes. AllMyLinks.com/IsaacW. You can find links to everything I'm talking about. Go subscribe, IlluminatiWatcher.substack.com. I think I got a Super Bowl article up already. I got tons of articles now. I'm going hard in the paint. Now, I broke down the whole idea in a show I did in 2022, a specialized show on the Super Bowl, when I understood more about how all this works than I did back in 2012 when I started. And it's about the basics of symbolism with Edward Bernays, propaganda, Sigmund Freud, Carl Jung, ritual magic, hermetic wisdom, ancient Egypt, and all kinds of stuff. And it all goes into this being a massive ritual, okay? It's got all of our attention, all of our focus. It can plant ideas into the subconscious. That's why they pay millions of dollars for seconds of commercial, because it's very important to get into your brain. Now, Roc Nation, that's Jay-Z's company, is inextricably linked to all this because Jay-Z secured the contract with the NFL to put on these halftime shows for all these years. And as you know, Jay-Z was in the news recently because his bestie Diddy had some allegations about a woman who was a minor, claims she got drugged, and then the things happened. You know what? Things happen by the hands of allegedly Diddy and allegedly Jay-Z and allegedly an unnamed female. Some say it's Beyonce, some say it's J-Lo, who knows? But anyway, the Super Bowl, almost exclusively Jay-Z puts his Roc Nation people on, right? Beyonce did it twice. Rihanna did it in 2023 and so on. So that takes us to this year's performer, Kendrick Lamar. Now, he is not signed to Roc Nation, but he was signed to Def Jam back when he was 17. But he was cut from the label because Jay-Z didn't think he was ready, something to that effect. Apparently it wasn't beef, but whatever. But so he did have roots with Jay-Z, ironically. But the drama with the Super Bowl this year is that it's in New Orleans, which would have made Lil Wayne the perfect pick. Right? Because Wayne's from New Orleans. And the CEO of Roc Nation, and specifically removed from Wikipedia, Desiree Perez, says that Wayne was in the running. So that's good, right? But Kendrick is having quite a moment, so they went with him, which I think that's fair, I guess. I myself would rather see Wayne do it, but whatever. Which takes us into Kendrick Lamar's camp, because they oftentimes have multiple people showing up. Absol, who is with Kendrick Lamar's camp, Top Dog Entertainment, just tweeted, "Listen, I have never gotten a feature from Free," referring to Dave Free, who's Kendrick's longtime sort of friend and promoter and record label exec and all that stuff. And people think that Absol might make an appearance, Schoolboy Q, J-Rock, who makes up Black Hippie. It's like this sort of rap supergroup with Kendrick Lamar. Now, if that's true, we're getting some real Illuminate confirmed, because Absol is a Crowley Thelemite, and he will for sure, without a doubt, be giving us some Aleister Crowley occult symbols, right, on this massive stage, the world stage. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, Absol is a rapper, and he did a whole album called Do What Thou Wilt, dedicated to Crowley himself. He's got a bunch of tattoos about this kind of stuff, about the occult. And again, go to my Substack, IlluminatiWatcher.substack.com. I did a whole article with images you can take a look at for yourself. Believe it or not. Links in the show notes as always. Anyway, back to Kendrick. I actually went through his Wikipedia background because I don't know a ton about him. Like, I like him well enough. I'm just not the biggest fan on earth, right? I think he's good, though. I'm not a fan. I don't know his whole story. Apparently, his father was a gangster's disciple from Chicago named Kenneth Duckworth. And his mother is a hairstylist named Paula Oliver. And they moved to Compton in 1984 when he was, a baby or a small child. And they named Kendrick after Eddie Kendricks of the Temptations. And his cousins are another rapper named Baby Keem and Swaggy P. That's the dude from the NBA, the meme. You know what I'm talking about? The Swaggy P meme, the whatever. But Kendrick Lamar lived in Section 8, you know, like, what do you call it, like public housing stuff. It was on food stamps and welfare. He was homeless for a time, apparently. Didn't join a gang, but was affiliated with the West Side Piru. And he kind of like grew up in that lifestyle, apparently. And he saw someone murdered when he was 5 during the 92 LA riots, which had a major effect on his view of the world. So now it makes sense that he hates Drake so much, right? Because he grew up with this very difficult environment. Presumably, Drake didn't go quite as rough of an upbringing, but he sure acting hard as hail. Hard as hail. So Kendrick Lamar, he gets into rapping in high school. He's always been very intelligent, good grades, kind of gets caught up in the gang life, gets baptized as a Christian at the age of 16. Dave Free becomes his friend. They start bonding over rapping and their love of hip hop and the show Martin, which is one of my favorite shows ever. Which is why I got beef with Will Smith, because Will Smith, I liked Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. And I believe Martin came out like a year later. And then in the next season of Fresh Prince, all of a sudden Will Smith's talking and acting just like Martin Lawrence. I was like, bro, what? What are we doing here? So Kendrick cites Tupac as his biggest influence, which makes a lot of sense. They have sort of similar upbringings-ish. And fun fact, Kendrick actually saw the filming of the California Love video with his father when he was at the Compton Swap Meet, which I thought was pretty interesting. That was such a huge song and video back in the day. He has a ton of influences, you know, Wayne, Prodigy from Mobb Deep, Eazy-E, 50, Eminem, NWA, Michael Jackson, Sade, Marvin Gaye, etc. And so Dave Free, Kendrick Lamar start working on mixtapes and promotions and stuff. They link up with Anthony Top Dog Tiffith, who was the guy who started Top Dog Entertainment label. And they go on to sign Kendrick and all the other black hippie rappers. And the rest is basically history, right? Tons of features, collaborations, Grammys, Kendrick's already been at the Super Bowl one time. He was behind the Black Panther soundtrack. And then last year he had this massive Drake beef, one of the biggest rap battles of all time, and arguably kind of the biggest, you could argue is the biggest diss track of all time. And, you know, I listen to Kendrick Lamar's albums. I think they're really good. I listened to Pimp a Butterfly when it came out. That's a really good album. It's good music. Now, I generally, when I'm listening to music, I'm trying to sort of like wake up and hype up and get my energy up. So not always my vibe, right? It's a little more poetic, but it's beautiful. David Bowie's Black Star album was based on or inspired by To Pimp a Butterfly. So respect for that, right? Now, as far as symbolism for Kendrick Lamar, because this is where normally I say, okay, this is why this guy's Illuminati confirmed. There's not a ton here, but there is something. So hang in there. I've looked up. There's like some images of him doing the West Side W with over one eye. There's him doing the Valve Silence with Pharrell. In his video for Humble, he's depicted at a Last Supper table, a bit of apotheosis, and then later he wore a crown of diamonds. Some would say mocking Christ. Some would say emulating Christ. Some would say paying homage to Christ. He's a Christian. So decide what you want there. Now, there was a guy named Space Ghost Perp. I don't know if anyone knows who that is anymore, but he rattled off a bunch of rappers that he claims he knows got effed in the A for fame, but he raps off 20 of the most famous rappers ever, and that includes Kendrick. So did Kendrick, Kendrick do that? I don't know. That's what this guy claims. But the aliens is what I want to talk about. Because back in 2017, a lot of people don't remember this, Kendrick Lamar was on Howard Stern's show. And they have a conversation and they're talking about the occult. They talk about Kendrick getting into astrology, and Kendrick Lamar says that when he was 6 years old, he saw a UFO in Compton.
Tell me you got into astrology. You really into that stuff?
I'm trying to be. I just love it.
I don't know, man. I can't get into that.
You can't get into that?
No. No, I don't believe in any of that.
Okay. Well, he thinks that energy is real, Howard.
Yeah.
Well, energy is real.
Because energy is in everything.
Didn't you say when you were a kid, you saw an alien or something, or a spaceship or something?
I always say this, and I'm going to stand my ground to this. Yes.
You did?
I did.
Where was he from?
Nobody believed me then,
I believe
and don't believe me
I
now.
I want to believe. I got to tell you something. Why are all these spaceships going somewhere where no one, well, only Kendrick Lamar can see them?
Yeah, why don't they visit the president?
You know, why don't they just make themselves known to it? What did you see? Share with me, please.
Man, I've seen.
I want to believe.
It's just something I can't really describe because it just sounds like, okay, you've seen a dart go past. That shit don't make sense. No.
Were you high?
No, I wasn't. I was 6 years old.
Oh.
You weren't doing anything then?
Right. You know, but I remember this and words can't describe what it was. Just a surreal moment. But
you didn't get abducted or anything?
I probably did. That's probably why I'm doing music right now. Who knows?
Well, no, that's probably where all might come from.
They probably gave me the energy and you know.
Hey, I met a shapeshifter. No big deal.
Right.
I don't talk about it.
Right. I probably shouldn't even be talking about it. That's why they don't want nobody to believe me.
Kendrick, you seem like a real solid person.
Now, he jokes and says he was probably abducted, and that's how he got this ability, this energy of creativity to be an artist. And he also talked about seeing Tupac in his dreams as well, apparently, which is interesting because that's what Left Eye Lopez said she had experience of right before she died down in Honduras. I wrote all about that in Sacrifice Magic Behind the Mic, my hip hop conspiracy book, if you want more on Left Eye. Now, what's interesting is like I said, I'm not the biggest fan of Kendrick, so I don't know his lyrics like that. So I asked ChatGPT, I said, are there lyrics by Kendrick Lamar about aliens? And this is what it came back with. There's a song from 2010 called Alien Girl. It says, the song itself references an alien girl, and while it's mostly about a mysterious and unattainable woman, the alien imagery suggests she is otherworldly, unique, or different. Then you got The Heart Part 2, which ironically Drake would later sort of used for his rap beef thing. Kendrick raps, I said I'm going to be me in that UFO sipping PAC with the A-L-I-E-N-S. And he plays with the idea of being in a UFO, symbolizing feeling alienated from the world or being on a different wavelength. There's a track called Lookout for Detox, and he says, I'm in a space shuttle with the homie where the government at. They waiting on E.T. I'm flying in them. So he references E.T., implying he's ahead of his time. Then in To Pimp a Butterfly, Black of the Berry, says that Kendrick uses themes of being perceived as different or othered by society, which could be tied to the feeling of being alien. Then Untitled 2, Kendrick speaks in a prophetic otherworldly tone. He says, tell him we ain't in Kansas no more. It's Southern California, but it's feeling like the Amazon. That's kind of... Now we're all right, ChatGPT. Now you're going off the rails. Then on the album Damn Feel, I feel like an alienated species. The Heart Part 5 explores higher consciousness, transformation, spiritual themes, and so on. Then there's a track I saw on Reddit called Hey Now, I think. It says starting to see spaceships on Rosecrans. I seen the aliens hold hands. They want to see me do my dance. And then there's another track called Reincarnation where he says, I did past life regression last year and it effed me up. Reincarnated on this earth for 100 plus. Body after body, lesson after lesson. Let's take it back to Michigan in 1947. 1947, a year of heavy duty alien activity. Oh, and then there was also to tie into the aliens, back in July of 24, he released the video for They Not Like Us, which has him attacking a pinata of an owl, obviously referring to Drake, because Drake has the OVO label, right? And he uses the owl symbolism. In fact, if you look at OVO, it looks like an owl's two eyeballs and a beak. And I've covered this many times in the past about how it's symbolism from Bohemian Grove, suggesting that Drake's in the Illuminati. Now, owls are associated with the goddess of wisdom and aliens also, which I find interesting because I just talked about on the Eggs Aliens show about the ideas of the divine feminine and the alien sort of thing. So the owls also associated with both. And if you've seen the movie The Fourth Kind, you saw it on there. And it's possible that Kendrick seems to have this recurring alien owl visitation throughout his life, right? When you consider he saw UFO when he was a kid, and now he's got this thing with the owls, with Drake, which is very Twin Peaks territory, right? The owls are not what they seem. And again, I keep saying it every episode because I want you to hear it. We're done with the Twin Peaks thing. I heard you loud and clear. Everyone's tired of it. I got you, fam, but we're all done. I got one more, February 23rd, the last episode of Grey Lodge, and then never again with Twin Peaks. If I do more Twin Peaks, it's going to be on a whole separate sort of project or podcast. I'm not really sure how I'm going to work that yet because I'm thinking about taking all my Twin Peaks Grey Lodge episodes and putting them on a free feed separately and removing them from my occult symbolism feed, but leaving them on the Patreon, of course, and all that. I don't know. We'll see. But anyways, Twin Peaks is over. I know people got irritated, so thank you for bearing with me. It's worth it if you got the time. Now, I'll put a link in the show notes for the Fourth Kind film analysis I did a few years ago where I talked more about cognitive modeling. And it was part of a four-show series I did that was super interesting. Check it out. Links in the show notes. And completely off topic, one last thing before I close up. Hunter Biden said he had experience with owls that I believe could be aliens. It says that one night in 2016, during a crack-fueled cross-country odyssey, he recalls in his new memoir, Beautiful Things, this is a few years old, Hunter Biden saw an owl. He had already totaled one rental car that trip. Suddenly, an enormous barn owl swooped over my windshield as if dropped straight from the inky night sky. It flew in the headlights like a guide along the winding mountain road, like a stunt plane at an air show. The meaning of this apparition, which he thinks saved his life, I didn't know if it was real or hallucination, but it sure as hell woke me up. So in conclusion, what do we got? Well, the Stern interview is kind of wild. Confirms one of these ideas of spiritual evolution through contact, unlocking the CDs. You know, so I think that during the Kendrick performance, we're going to see some kind of homage to the owls or the aliens or the UFOs. Which, by the way, the location of New Orleans is a weird, very occulted sort of place, right? There's lots of weird stuff going on. You got the hoodoo, the voodoo, the all kinds of, you know, zombie talk and vampires. And then on Jan 1st, we had that terrorist massacre there, which everyone already forgot about like it was 100 years ago. But now let's talk about the score of the game. Back to the sports ball. The Eagles, I talked about this in the 2023 Super Bowl show, I think. The Eagle from America is actually the Freemasonic Phoenix of the occult. And the Phoenix or the Eagle represents intellect, science, and it's kind of Luciferian in that the intellect and the science is the doctrine of the Luciferians taken from Prometheus, and the Eagle symbolism represents the Phoenix in the final stage of enlightenment of the intellect, of course. In alchemy, it's the evolved final form of man. And it all makes sense because Philly is where they signed the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution and so on because the Founding Fathers were Illuminati confirmed. They were deists. And they didn't really dig religion, right? They weren't, you know, I know, a lot of people out there think they were the sort of like God-fearing Christian types, but I don't think so. Thomas Jefferson wrote his own Bible, which is very heretical. Thomas Paine, he wanted all that Christian smoke. I mean, lots of them. It goes on and on, right? Nonetheless, the team of the Eagles is in Philadelphia. And, you know, the Philadelphia Phoenixes, you might as well call them that. But, of course, the team, the Eagles, they have no ownership over this. So don't be hating on the birds, right? Now, someone on Patreon told me that if the Eagles lose, their overall record will go to 666 wins and 666 losses. I didn't even believe it. I was like, get out of here. That sounds like some nonsense social media conspiracy. But then I looked it up. And it said at the end of the 24 season, the Philadelphia Eagles' all-time record is 638 wins and 639 losses. I was like, oh, see? Nonsense. But wait, there's more. But wait, there's more. They also have 28 playoff games. No, I'm sorry. They also won 28 playoff games and lost 26. So if you add those together, you get 666 wins and 665 losses. Meaning if they lose, we're going to have double 666s on their record. Now, besides the obvious sort of mark of the beast talk with 666, you got to go to Manly P. Hall and the Secret Teachings of All Ages, because he has a section in there on Pythagorean mathematics, sacred geometry, gematria, numerology, whatever you want to call it. He says the mysteries died with Pythagoras and they were lost. And he tries to point out some ideas, but he claims, he's like, look, I don't know the full mystery scope, but here's some ideas that I know survived over the years. And he talks about gematria. He's like, you got to boil down words. And you need to start with the original tongue of Greek or Hebrew or maybe Aramaic. He said, find the most ancient version of the word and then boil that down with gematria. Like, he'll give an example with Abraxas, boiling down to 365 and so on. Well, listen to this. From the book, it says, all higher numbers can be reduced to one of the original 10 numerals and the 10 itself to 1. Therefore, all groups and numbers resulting from the translation of names of deities into their numerical equivalents have a basis in one of the first 10 numbers. By the system in which the digits are added together, 666 becomes 6 plus 6 plus 6, or 18. And this in turn becomes 1 plus 8, or 9. According to Revelation, 144,000 are to be saved. This number becomes 1 plus 4 plus 4 plus 0 plus 0 plus 0, which equals 9. Thus proving that both the beast of Babylon and the number of the saved man, the beast of Babylon and the number of the saved refer to man himself, whose symbol is the number 9. He's saying numerically they're equivalent. He's saying the number of people saved is numerically equivalent to 9, and the number 666 is equivalent to 9. So man is saved by the devil, 666. Which, by the way, there's also a competing theory that 616 is the number of the beast, but whatever. To sum it up, to wrap it all up, my guess, my prediction is that the Eagles win by 9. Okay? Eagles by 9, Kendrick Lamar with the Owls and the Aliens, and stay subscribed and come right back here, because after the Super Bowl, we're going to recap. Unless there's absolutely nothing, and you know, I'm not going to get on here and be like, hey, there was nothing. But I'd be surprised if there was nothing. I mean, it's been every year I've been doing this, so we'll see what happens. Stay subscribed to all my email newsletters and stuff. Sometimes I just shoot out emails there. So subscribe to my Substack now. And I'll put links in the show notes for a bunch of other shows you can check out if you want more. All right. Thanks for listening. Until next time, stay positive. Eagles by 9. Let's go.